Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Phil Bauermaster, and this is Fast Forward Radio on Blog Talk Radio. This is the official podcast of the Speculous Weblog, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, how are you, Phil?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm excellent, excellent.
Well,
doing good.
I thought we would start out with a quick sports update, seeing as we probably now have new listeners who are counting on each show beginning with that. So I want you to go ahead because I know you've got some good news from the LSU front that you want.
Well, LSU, as you know, they had a perfect season up until last week, and then they lost to Kentucky in a game that nobody expected them to lose. Well, they had another tough game this weekend, but they won literally in the last second. With a touchdown that stunned Auburn, and we took the game. So it was an awesome game. It just like last week, it was a good game, but this time the LSU fans, it was a good game that we happened to win, so it makes it even sweeter. So it was a lot of fun.
That is excellent. And so a game they shouldn't have, they weren't expected to lose, that they lost, followed by a game in which they weren't expected to win, which they won.
Well, I don't know if you could say they weren't expected to win. I mean, everybody, you know, even though they had a bad week last week, I don't think that many people had counted them out, you know. They just have an outstanding team this year. But they expected it to be a hard game. Auburn has a great team, and Auburn played ball right there with them the whole game until the very end. And so, you know, won by less than a touchdown.
Sounds like a very exciting game.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Well, meanwhile, for those who haven't caught the news elsewhere, the Colorado Rockies have won the National League Championship and are going to the World Series. So if you're in the Denver area, there has been a mild amount of media coverage. Of
mild, huh?
You may have picked that up already. I don't know.
I think I heard the mayhem from Louisiana, Phil.
Yeah, it's been big. And now I can officially disclose something that I've never actually talked about. Either on the blog or on Fast Forward Radio. But the official colors of our blog, you know, the kind of black and purple,
yeah,
are actually Colorado Rockies colors. So we've always sort of been a Colorado Rockies blog all this time. And,
well, that's cool. That's cool. was that subliminal on your part, or was that a plan?
I just thought it looked cool. It never occurred to me that they were Rockies colors until I was going to slap a logo up there and say, "Go Rockies" for the World Series. And I thought, hey, this logo really matches.
wait a minute. I guess it's in the water. That's where you live, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, it's the Purple Mountains majesty. it surrounds us and kind of gets into our heads.
I guess so. Well,
anyway, enough about sports. We will be adding other segments. I think we'll probably bring a cooking segment into the show here eventually. Spreading fashion. I know, Lord knows, everybody wants to hear my thoughts on fashion, so that should be good. But maybe now let's turn it a little bit towards some of our topics of interest. And I know that one of the things that you had suggested, I believe, in the entry about tonight's broadcast was that we might get into nanotech a little bit. So what was your thinking? What do you want to do with nanotech tonight?
Well, I mean, there's been so much in the news lately, Phil, even in the last week, that's just fascinating. I thought we'd get into a few of these things. And we shouldn't try to make this a primer on nanotech. We kind of assume if you're a listener of this program, you know what the word means. But I guess we can real quickly say that nanotech is anything that, you know, that we managed to engineer by any means less than 100 nanometers. Is that right, Phil?
I think that's the basic definition. That's a pretty fair definition. Sure, it's technology at the nanoscale. So it's,
and they define nanoscale as anything under 100 nanometers.
Under 100 nanometers, and for those who aren't familiar with that scale of measurement, basically what we're talking about is molecular technology. We're talking
right.
about technology down at the level of molecules. So we're talking about technology that involves the very small and involves actually manipulating matter at that level. If you're interested in finding out more about, I'll make a plug right here real fast. If you're interested in finding out kind of from the ground up about nanotech, a great place to go is foresight.org, where you can learn about the Foresight Nanotech Institute. They have a lot of great resources.
Well, since you brought it up, aren't you going to a conference, or I think they call it the UN-conference. Is it Foresight that's associated with, or is that another group?
That's right. Foresight, the UN-conference, the 2007 Foresight UN-conference Vision Weekend is coming up November 3rd through the 4th. Actually, I haven't finalized my travel plans. It depends on whether I'm going to be on a business trip in California the day before that anyway, but I am hoping to make that. It is November 3rd and 4th, so it's coming up, weekend after next.
Right.
So still plenty of time to get good cheap flights for those of you who are listening and thinking about going. And if you're at all interested in the field of nanotechnology, if you're at all interested in, it goes under a lot of different names, molecular manufacturing or any of these subjects that touch on nanotech, whether it be artificial intelligence or life extension or the technological singularity, a lot of this stuff gets talked about. And in fact, my attending a Foresight Nanotech Institute Vision Weekend, an UN-conference 3 or 4 years ago, was actually kind of a starting point for both the Speculist and then eventually for Fast Forward Radio. I can't recommend the event enough, so I'm certainly hoping to make it. And
it's a good opportunity to meet a lot of luminaries in one place, which you would normally never have the opportunity to do, right?
Absolutely is, yeah. Kind of like the Singularity Summit in that respect, where the brain power that gets brought together into a single place is most impressive, and it's a great opportunity to not only meet these people but hear their ideas, talk with them, interact with them, and I can't recommend it enough. It's a terrific time.
Well, I see we have a few guests in the chat room, Phil, and I wanted to let them know that we're going to be talking a little bit here at the beginning, just you and I, on these various topics, and we'll open up the phone lines here. About the second half of the show, you say?
Yeah, somewhere in there. We're going to make it interactive tonight because we've got, a number of nanotech-related topics that we want to go through, and we've got this rating scale that we're going to try putting them on, and then maybe if some folks want to call in and give us their own ideas on where they think each of these developments rates, that would be fun.
Okay, well, let's quickly get into the first one.
Okay.
World's smallest radio, okay? The idea on this one, I found this fascinating. Here's an experiment where they hook up an iPod to a radio, and they transmit the iPod, the music from the iPod across the room and to some speakers on the opposite side of the room, and it plays the music. Big deal, right? I mean, Marconi did that, right?
Right.
Well, this was with a radio that was, that was a molecular radio. This was built with carbon nanotubes, obviously extremely tiny. It was a nanoscale device. It's under 100 nanometers. That's remarkable to me. Just a few years ago, we were hearing things like manufacturing anything at that scale would be impossible. But
here we have a functioning radio at that scale.
Yeah.
Now, how do they play back? I mean, can they somehow connect that functioning radio to a device that will let you hear the audio from it, or how does that?
Well, when I started reading the article, I originally thought, well, this is a receiver. When I hear radio, I usually think, the box on my shelf is a radio. It receives. This was a transmitter, apparently.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so it transmitted to a regular radio that picked it up and played it.
And what did it transmit?
I don't know what music they played. I guess it could have been anything.
I'm looking through here to see. That would be kind of cool to know. Hopefully they picked something really good.
How about Mr. So-and-so, come here, I need you.
Yeah. Mr. Drexler, come here, I need you.
That's perfect, yeah.
Would have been a good initial message. Okay, so there you go. Now I'm going to quickly introduce our rating scale by which we will rate both this nanotech development and all the others. This is actually a scale that I put together. It's been like 3.5 years ago or more, in a post that I've actually put a link up on the site on the Fast Forward Radio Live Tonight entry at speculus.com. So if anyone's interested in seeing what I'm talking about, you can actually see the picture right there. But what I talked about in this post was kind of the development space for nanotech, and I thought it would be interesting if we had a way of saying, well, for any particular development, what's its significance? Is this just a more basic development? Is it something that's just a lot of marketing hype? Is it just kind of fake? Is it a major development, something that's of great significance, or is it all the way up to what we call the spooky level? And maybe, Stephen, you'd like to say a word about what we mean when we call a nanotech development spooky, or what we're talking about when we talk about spooky nanotechnology.
Spooky nanotechnology is nanotech that is game-changing. The world would not be the same after something that would be spooky. What's a good example of that, Phil? You had, way back when you first came up with this, and I have to hand it to you, this is a very good graph. This was based on, you had read something by Glenn Reynolds, I believe, and came up with this graph that kind of, you know.
Yeah, he had given these categories, and I said, oh, that's interesting, let's make that visual.
And yeah.
I laid it out in these quadrants.
And the reason it's cool is because, obviously, you can't have, it's either major or fake, or it's simple or it's spooky. You know, the way it lays out in the graph is just perfect. It kind of explains how the categories interact with one another.
Well, and I should go on to add that the two axes of the graph are made up by the impact on society that a particular development would have on a 0 to 10 scale, and then the impact on technology specifically that development would have. So, if something is up close to a 10 on its impact on society and up close to a 10 in its impact on technology, then that's where we run into what we call spooky nanotech. And to me, quintessential examples of spooky nanotech would be things like medical nanobots that are launched into your body and battle disease, or something like JSTOR's Hall's utility fog. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, a spray can, and you spray it, and little nanobots come out, and will assume any shape you want, and do anything you want. Right. That is the spooky kind of nanotech, the world transforming kind of magical, almost nanotech.
Our nanofactory, something that you basically say, Earl Grey hot, and it spits it out, Star Trek style.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That would be some fun spooky nanotech. So I remember. When you were putting ideas for this show together, you said, hey, let's talk about whether nanotech has gotten to the spooky level yet.
Yeah.
And so I thought, hey, well, why don't we, let's dig out the old, actually, you suggested digging out the old scale and rate these things according to that. So.
Okay, so where does a radio that's the size of a molecule fall on your scale? I certainly would say it would not be fake.
It's not fake.
It's not fake nanotech.
Let's do it numerically. Let's try this. What impact on society rating would you give that?
Well, I tell you, if you turn something like that into a cell phone that rested in your ear, and was with you all the time, I would say that'd be pretty major.
Okay, and the technological impact, it would seem to me, is also pretty big. I'm going to give it about I'm going to say it's
less than spooky.
Yeah, I'm going to give it like about a 6 or 7 on the society scale, maybe about a 4. On the technology scale, so it's a major development, pushing us in the direction of spooky, but maybe not quite spooky.
Yeah, not quite spooky, but we'll have a lot more disembodied conversations. You know, I was thinking about that, Phil. You know, when you see somebody in a grocery store talking to themselves, and you figure they're talking to you, and then you're embarrassed when you figure out that they're talking in their Bluetooth cell phone. Underneath their hair. I mean, society has yet to come up with a way to deal with that yet, the embarrassment associated with that. And I assume that that'll get even worse when the cell phone disappears completely.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, at least there's still these little wireless devices that you can sometimes see in somebody's ear, and you get a little bit of a visual warning.
Yeah.
But
oh, well. I guess it's something we'll have to deal with.
Yeah, when you take the technology down to that size, it'll just be, I think society will just adapt to the notion that people walking around talking out loud aren't necessarily talking to anyone around them.
They could be talking with, they could be talking to you, but they could also be talking with somebody across the country. So, and there's no way to knowing, I guess, until they look at you and like, I don't know, some kind, give you some kind of visual clue.
Right. The generations coming up now will have a much easier time with this, Stephen, than you and I.
That's
because
right.
That behavior of walking around talking out loud, not to anyone present, to us,
it's almost rude.
It's
indicates
insanity, right? I mean,
yeah.
This is like who's off their meds if they're doing that. Because,
that's right.
Because we're programmed to respond to that at a time when that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll say major, not quite spooky.
Okay, what's the next one, Phil?
Okay, our next one, let me see if I've got this right. Our next one is, look, Ma, no batteries, introducing solar-powered nanotech.
Okay, so we got solar cells at the molecular level.
Right, solar cells 200 times thinner than a human hair.
Yeah.
Which is great. If you read up on nanotechnology, everything always gets compared to the human hair. The human hair scale seems to be what journalists use to try to convey nanotech to the masses. So everything's always in... Okay, so 200 times thinner than a human hair, these nano solar panels that will be able to support bioterrorism monitors. They say in-body diagnostics, and that it will be available in less than a decade.
Yeah, I wonder how important that would be for in-body diagnostics. I think what they're thinking about is like. In your body, having nanobots that are powered by solar, these tiny solar cells. But it seems to me one thing is one thing about being inside the human body is that it tends not to be a great place to have light. I mean, inside the body.
You would think.
I would think that those nanobots would probably be powered the same way your body is chemically. What is it? ATP converting to ADP. It's the way that all the cells of your body are powered. I would imagine that'd be a convenient and good way to power nanobots as well. It's just a sugar thing.
You would think that any technology that you're introducing into that system at that scale, you just want it to hitch a ride on the energy processing that's taking place there anyway.
Right.
That would be the smart way to go.
I would think, but I'm not to disparage this the development at all. That's again another shock to hear about it because again it's another example of technology at a level I had no idea that they were that close to developing something that complex at that scale.
And I think the important thing to note here is let's talk not just about this particular development, the one that we'll have a link to up on the site that we're talking about. This was a story on Discovery News that we're looking at. But let's talk about nanotechnology as it relates to solar power generally, where we've heard about things like spray-on nano solar panels. This notion that you can take an aerosol can, spray a surface, and that's actually going to have solar collection panels on it at the molecular level, so you can make virtually any surface into a solar collector. Plus the fact that by working to that level of precision, to the molecular level of precision, the ability to efficiently capture solar energy is going to increase.
Yeah. So if you can do it at the molecular level, then a huge solar panel. You incorporate that technology into a huge solar panel, certainly you would think that would have an impact on the efficiency of a large solar panel. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
that could change the world. If you bring in a solar panel that harvests sunlight at a cost less than what you can pull off the grid, the electric grid, watch out. That could change the world.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I've noticed is when Ray Kurzweil talks about coming developments, the application of nanotechnology materials developments to solar power is one of the huge developments that he refers to. In fact, when you ask him about global warming, he says what people aren't taking into consideration is when nanotechnology enables this much more efficient level of solar energy collection, our use of fossil fuels is going to start decreasing considerably at that point, and that actually the solution to global warming, if you're completely bought into the carbon footprint theory, the notion that it's burning fossil fuels that's causing global warming, that will be eliminated just by the fact that we're going to have these wonderful, cheap, abundant means of collecting solar energy. So at that point, the level of global transformation possible through this development seems significant. You know what? I'm going to tweak our scale. We've only done one of these so far.
Right.
And it's just occurred to me that I want to say impact on society, and then I want to say not impact on technology. Let's just call it the wow factor. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's
okay.
What we're talking about, the whoa, you know, how weird is that, right? Because this is one where I look at it and I say impact on society, 9 or 10, right?
Yeah, it could be very huge.
Give
it
a 9.8.
Yeah.
But its wow factor is like, well, it's getting up there.
Yeah,
right.
This is not our old gray hot time yet, but it's pretty cool, and it could really, really have an impact if it's developed and made marketable. So yeah,
low spooky.
Yeah, low spooky. Okay.
Not high spooky, but it's.
I would still not make this quite spooky. I'd say it's high major or something.
High major. Low spooky.
Okay,
it's kissing that line a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. And I tell you, the exciting thing about this field is back when you made the scale, you didn't have anything you could put really in the major or spooky categories at that time. I mean, we were talking, nanotech meant stain-resistant pants back then. That was in 2004 when you came up with that.
I mean, the stuff where there was low impact on society and no real wow factor. It was just this kind of marketing gloss that was being put on things because nano had become a hot word. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And a few simple developments. But you're right. We're seeing some major movement into these other two quadrants. So it's great.
That's exciting.
This opportunity now to update. Okay, so let's move on. What's our next one?
Okay, the next one is a sore subject for you, Phil, because it will remind you of your defeat in our little trivia contest. Transparent plastic.
You know what? I'm going to concede that if Wikipedia, here's your conditional victory dance for you, Stephen. If Wikipedia is a reliable source of information, then, in fact, you won the argument about transparent aluminum.
Well, I was very confident about it because I just had a very specific memory of how that scene went down. And I guess we should, for the benefit of our audience, we should tell what in the world we're talking about.
Well, I think, go back and look on the spec. We certainly don't get back into it completely, but we had a slight difference of opinion as to one of the plot points of Star Trek IV.
Okay. But anyway, let's get into actually the thing then. We're going to run out of time.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, transparent plastic that is as strong as steel. Okay, that's pretty cool. If that's developed and made marketable and can compete on the basis of price with actual steel, then you've got something that's pretty nifty. You could think of something that's as strong as steel, perhaps as light as plastic, and that you can also see through. What are we talking now? Are we talking deep sea diving bells that you can make a whole city under the ocean, or perhaps make a space shuttle that you can see through? I don't know, all kinds of things. And so that's pretty cool.
Well, I think about things like this. There's this planned U-shaped walkway that they're building out over the Grand Canyon. Have you seen the specs on that? It looks pretty cool.
I saw that, Phil, and I got to say, there's no way in the world I'd be able to walk out on that. that was vertigo-inducing just looking at the specs.
That does look pretty scary. But if you've ever been on the rim of the canyon,
yeah,
one of the things that, I mean, the spectacle of it is outrageous. I mean, it's just, there's no describing it. There's nothing else you can compare it to when you're standing there looking out over the Grand Canyon. But the one thing you do notice is, yeah, I'm really high up, but it's kind of banked, It's like it goes down a bit, and then it goes across, and then down a bit, and then across, and down a bit, and then across. But what they've done is this one place on the rim where it doesn't bank all that much, they've just built this walkway out, and you can stand right over the, you know, whatever that is, 3,000-foot precipice, and be standing directly over the Colorado River. I would think that that kind of engineering would be well supported by this sort of technology. How important that is, I don't know, but just in terms of creating these very high, very elaborate structures that would allow people to look at the world from way up high and yet still be in a completely supported environment is one thing you'd be able to do with it anyway.
Well, you know, you imagine skyscrapers that are completely transparent all the way through, you know. Even the girders, the beams themselves could be made out of this. You know, an architect could think of 1,000 things to do with this stuff.
Well, if modern architecture has a resurgence, and this might actually enable one, the stuff that was big back in the 30s and 40s, the just totally glass, totally smooth-looking houses and buildings, you still see a lot of modern for skyscrapers and those kinds of things. But people could have, you know, houses that were just completely transparent. I don't know how appealing that would be to most people, but that would be an option. Okay, so how do we rate this one?
Well, I would say that material science always takes people by surprise. You know, sometimes the most unsexy-sounding development ends up changing the world the most. I don't know. I would say that I would rate this, I don't know, maybe a high on the societal and low on the wow factor. I don't know.
You know, I was going to do just the opposite. I was going to say it's a high wow factor, but from what I'm seeing so far, I'm not sure how transformative it'll be for society. It'll do some cool things, but not the world-changing stuff. So I was going to make this kind of a simple, but... Yeah, I'm not sure.
In the chat room, I believe it was Matt has just stated that he thinks that we, you know, whether or not, and going back to the topic we were talking about just a little while ago, whether or not a global, you know, you take global warming into account or you give it any credence, replacing fossil fuel is a good idea anyway. And I guess his vote is, you know, he thinks that the solar cells is a pretty nanoscale solar cells could be a great thing.
I would agree with that. Actually, I was all for getting rid of fossil fuels before anybody ever said global warming. I've been saying that for years.
I mean, there's plenty of political reasons, geopolitical reasons that weaning ourselves off of fossil fuel, at least partly, would be a good thing. And so,
absolutely. And plus, you know, from a speculative standpoint, there's just all these cool other things we could be doing.
And that's right. I mean, we've been powering our country one way for. What, over 100 years now? Come on, we can think of something else.
Yeah, we got lots of
we got some options. We ought to pursue them. Yeah, okay. So that's transparent plastic. What's the next one, Phil? I think we were
We've got the new nano weapon against cancer. Is that the one?
Yeah. It's not so new. They've been playing with this molecule, and this is an example of nanotech. This was nanotech before nanotech was cool, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is
before they called it nanotech.
From Technology Review, and the subheading here is gold nanoparticles with branching polymers could attack tumors in multiple ways. So what's going on with this one, Steve?
Okay, it's a molecule that's called a dendrimer. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think I am.
Sounds right.
Dendrimer. This molecule is just you can almost think of it as like a piece of, think of a piece of coral from a reef, okay?
Right.
You know, the popcorn coral, the coral that has all the little branches that comes off of it. This is like that, and each of these branches can hold other molecules. And so, for example, with cancer, they can bait this molecule with folic acid. Cancer just loves folic acid. It needs it in higher quantities than the rest of your body. And so you can just, you know, put folic acid all over it, but also attach cancer-fighting drugs. And so what that means is that you can, with a smaller amount of these toxic cancer-fighting drugs, you can hit the cancer harder because the cancer is eating this up and bringing it in like a Trojan horse to have this cancer-fighting drug just pour out into the cancer and kill it dead. And that's a pretty exciting development. And
that is extremely exciting. I love the image of the molecule baiting.
Yeah.
The molecule is going out fishing for cancer.
Right.
Leading with a little folic acid that the cancer is attracted to, and then before the cancer knows what hits it, whammo. It's gonna smack it with whatever
chemo we find is best for that particular cancer, probably.
Now, but the interesting thing here is let's clarify this. We're not talking about, this is not a tiny robot.
To the extent that a molecule can be a machine, I guess it's a robot. But I mean, at this level, there's hardly, it's a distinction without a difference.
Okay.
I think that at this level, at the nanoscale level, we're talking molecular all the time. I guess that's my whole point there, is that, you know, a nanobot is often can be just a few, you know, molecules put together that we know how they will work, and so they go out and do do our bidding because we understand at that level and can engineer at that level.
That's an excellent point, where we can easily get confused about what we mean when we say something is a. Let's put robot aside, because there are some specifics around what a robot is, but whether it's a machine, you know, this is whether it's technology, this is definitely technology. This is definitely taking something within the physical universe and applying it to a particular problem. That's what technology has always been, whether it's, you know, been carving stone or trying to write artificial intelligence software. It always gets down to trying to solve a particular problem using a particular tool. Here, the tool happens to be a molecule, but it's definitely a technological solution.
Right.
Whether it's a robot, well, there will be robots later that we can look at them and say those are definitely robots. But the point is, they probably won't do much more than this molecule is doing, and they won't be much more sophisticated than it is. So, it may be a proto-robot, if I may use that term.
Yeah.
Where are we going to rank this one?
Well, let's see. I mean, if it actually did what we hope that it will do, which is allow us to engineer solutions to each and every individual type of cancer, you know, you might have to bait it slightly differently for a different type of cancer. You might have to use slightly different chemo drugs, but using the same build, okay, or the same chassis to build different vehicles to kill cancer. That would change the world, and so it's almost in the spooky range to me.
I'm going to say this is high on impact on society, high on wow factor once you start thinking about it.
Right.
If you just think, oh, it's just a molecule they're throwing out there, maybe the wow factor isn't there. But when you start thinking about what's happening there, I'm going to give this one, since our spooky category on the picture, if you look at it, says near spooky anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this is definitely near spooky.
Yeah.
This is a terrific. Exciting development. Exactly the kind of thing that makes me excited about the future is when we start seeing these kinds of things unfold. Okay, so let's review. What did we end up with here?
We had several majors here. We had world's smallest radio. We called that a major development and fell within the major category, right?
Okay.
Solar powered nanotech, also major, right? Transparent plastic as strong as steel. Are we still major? I mean, are we major all the way down?
Well, I was thinking that I think I had put solar-powered nanotech in the near spooky, or right on the border for spooky, and I had put transparent plastic right on the border between simple and spooky.
Okay.
So we do have a little bit of spread here, as far as these all go. But
yeah,
we can. If we have anyone who's interested in calling in and telling us, we can get some correction on this.
I believe that Matt is certainly interested in calling in, and anyone else that would like to call in, you're certainly welcome to.
Yeah, this will be your chance, listeners, to set us straight on the significance of these nanotechnology developments.
Or the non-significance, if you happen to be a stick in the mud.
Right, absolutely. Or if you know of some others that we should have been talking about that we didn't, because this was just kind of a random grab.
Yeah, well, I mean, pretty much you go to Google, you type in nanotech in the news, and you're shocked at what's going on.
Exactly. These were some biggies. Anybody's got a good example of spooky? Anybody's got a good example of fake? That would be fun too. So
stain resistant pants is a good one.
We've done that one.
So yeah, so that's a good example of fake. So give us another example.
Yeah.
But anyway, the number to call in if you'd like to is 347-215-8972, and give us a call, and we'll visit about all that.
All right. Sounds good.
In the chat room, we've got Jen of the Jungle asks, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Well, I'm sorry, Jen.
Hey, call on in, Jen.
We're talking about nanotech. But anyway, And so I look forward to Matt giving us a call as well, and we'll visit about all these things. So
or anyone anyone listening in.
Anyway, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, and this sort of was not nanotech related, but in a way it was. There was a study that came out in the news in the last few days about how, basically, according to the mathematical model this guy came up with, it was a pretty grim future for us, where bacteria of all types, you know, the staph infections and all kinds of things that are resistant to antibiotics, you know, basically overcome us. And he gave a bunch of reasons for it, and his mathematical models show that we're in for a rough ride over the next 50 to 100 years. And I, you know, the thing is, reading it, I found the article to be very convincing, but he did not take into account where technology is going, in the next 50 to 100 years. And so I'm still optimistic, and the reason I am is because you have things like these dendrimers that you can load up different medicines on and hit things in different ways. And if you can do that with cancer, perhaps you can do it with a bacterial
infection. So what does the model show exactly? He's saying that microbes are becoming more powerful, they're becoming more dangerous, there will be more of them, we will lose our resistance to them. What are the
bacteria become, more and more of these things become antibiotic resistant, evolution in operation. You kill off the bacteria that can't handle your antibiotic, and what's left? The bacteria that can handle your antibiotic, and then when they reproduce, then all of a sudden you've got lots and lots of this bacteria out there that we no longer have the tools to fight. And so you have to come up with different ways to fight it. And I think we have to think beyond antibiotics in the coming years.
And the thing that might take us to the next step is nanotechnology, potentially.
Yeah, and I think nanotechnology is a big part of the answer medically to germ warfare, basically.
And so in the model, is he talking germ warfare, or is he just talking about what's naturally likely to happen?
No, I'm sorry. I guess I chose my words poorly there. He's talking natural. And it was interesting. They said, diseases were less, when there were fewer people, diseases would hit you less, diseases would hit less hard because a disease basically had to walk more carefully. Because there was always the possibility of knocking out your host, okay?
Right.
When there's fewer people around, and you're a germ that's that is adapted to human beings, and there's a couple hundred thousand humans in the entire world, you better not wipe too many of them out. And so things like syphilis and other germs like that, have been with us since the very beginning, but they didn't get bad until a few hundred years ago. A few thousand years ago, rather. But, some of these things have been with us for a long, long time and are only now beginning to hit, to be as deadly as they are. And part of the reason they are as deadly as they are is that they can afford to be because there's more people.
That's very interesting. And
yeah.
You would think that just the fact that there are more people interacting with each other across greater distances, it's a lot of the same kinds of factors that we see playing into accelerating change generally.
We've had Matt on hold for a while now. Phil, you want to bring him in on this?
Well, sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing?
Matt, welcome back to the program.
Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, yeah. You want to go through this list again, Matt? Do you have
Yeah, set us straight on our rankings here.
How do you feel about how we ranked these various developments? I can call them out if you'd like me to.
Okay, you can call them.
Okay, world's smallest radio. How do you feel about that?
I'd place that second behind the solar cells.
Okay, second behind which one?
The solar cells.
Okay, you put that. Okay, so you'd say it's would you say it's major a major development, but just not quite as major as solar?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And, how's transparent plastic look?
I think that was probably the least impactful of the ones you mentioned, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool too. But yeah, you know, and I tend to agree with you. It could be very, very, you know, it's one of those things. It could end up surprising us all and being more important than anything. But I would say at this point that it's less major than the other two, the first two. And how about the dendrimers that fight cancer?
I think I would place that near the nanoscale radio. I was mentioning how that could later lead to telecommunications between nanobots, possibly.
Yeah. So you're thinking that could be kind of a group consciousness among nanobots? Is that what you're saying? That one's talking to another and kind of telling them what to do, telling each other what to do.
Yes, they could run on a unified program, such as like navigating to a body to do nanomedicine.
Well, you know, that to me sounds like you're getting spooky there. What do you think, Phil?
That is definitely in the spooky category. And just to make sure I caught you, Matt, I'm having a little trouble catching your audio signal there, but you're talking about a combined use of the radio and the dendrimers together. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, I think further down the line that's something that could be possible.
Yeah, so let's say you had a dendrimer that was set up to fight cancer, and it was also set up with a molecular scale radio. And you basically would radio instructions to it to tell it how to do what it needed to do. Now that would be awesome.
Right there. That's
spooky.
That's tiny robots in your pants.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just have a little PDA in my pocket, and it would tell me what I needed to eat next for my next meal or whatever. To run at maximum efficiency or whatever, because these little dudes are in there seeing to my health all the time.
Absolutely. So
that's
how about
cool.
any major developments lately that you know about that we missed, Matt, that you'd like to talk about?
I've heard of some silver-based nanoparticles that have been injected into tumor sites with animal models, and they've been heated up with lasers, and it's denatures the proteins in the tumor cells, and that's been very effective with cancers in pigs, I believe.
Well, I'd heard something about that, and I think it also involved dendrimers. They were basically loading these things, loading up dendrimers with either gold or silver, and again with folic acid, and the cancer would take this in, and then you zap the person with a laser, and the laser doesn't cook any part of the body except for where the gold nanoparticles are, or the silver, and it would literally heat that up within the cancer cell and literally cook it inside the person's body. So that was pretty cool too. I heard about that as well.
For anyone who's just joined us, a dendrimer is a molecule. What we're talking about is a small piece of molecular machinery that can be used in the new story we're linking, potentially to treat cancer, but also might have applications to other diseases as well.
Yeah.
Just kind of a refresh there since we had mentioned the dendrimers quite a bit earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So basically you've got something that could attack cancer on two fronts, both to use it for more targeted chemotherapy and also for basically cooking the cancer if you use a dendrimer loaded up with gold or silver. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Outstanding.
Anyway,
so do we have another caller on the line? I think I see someone.
Oh yeah, we do actually. Let's see if we can bring this other person in.
All right.
Hello, caller. You're on Fast Forward Radio.
Yeah, this is Jen. Obviously, you guys know me from your chat room.
Yeah, hey Jen.
Hey Jen, thank you so much for joining. I was having a hard time talking on the phone and chatting with you at the same time.
Oh, believe me, I like actually ignore my chat room. My show's on. There's like 20 people chatting me. I'm like, whatever.
Stephen, we'll have to get the rest of our staff to be manning the chat room.
Yeah, that's right.
You need a staff to do it. I mean, it's that, and people say things, I start cracking up while I'm on the air, and I'm like I'm interviewing someone or doing something. It's like whatever. But actually, what you were just saying really interested me, and I told you I was drinking, so bear with me.
Well, you sound great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Jen,
but
you were actually interested not so much in rating the different nanotechnology developments, but talking a little bit about the notion of whether microbes are becoming more dangerous and the public health concerns around that. Is that right?
Well, that was one thing, but then you start, I was kind of listening in a little bit more, and you're talking about these, what was it, the dendrimers?
Yes.
Right, right.
And you're talking about how these were able to go into cancer or tumors or cancer cells and destroy them?
That's right. The mental picture I was using earlier before you came on, I think, was like imagine a piece of coral. You know popcorn coral,
yeah,
and how that looks with all the little arms coming off of it?
Yes.
It's a molecule that looks like that. And you can load that molecule up with all kinds of interesting and neat things. And one thing that they found is that they can load it up with folic acid, which cancer loves. It eats it up. And they can also load it up with cancer drugs. And so you basically can build a Trojan horse. The cancer just eats up that folic acid that's attached to the dendrimer and brings within it the toxic chemotherapy to kill it.
How would this be applied, though?
Well, you know, imagine you've got some toxic chemotherapy you inject into somebody. Well, you just inject it in at random, and it makes them sick as a dog.
Yeah.
Because it attacks all over the body and not just cancer. It
kills a lot of healthy cells along with the cancer cells.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. And so this, you use less of the toxic material, and it goes and more of it goes straight to the cancer. And so you have a greater effect for every bit of the, you know, from the toxic material you have to use, you get more effect out of it, and so you get less sick, and perhaps also are more efficient in hitting the cancer harder. So
that's huge.
Yeah, so it could be a big development. So yeah.
What do you mean? It could be like where is it? And it's.
It's in trials. They've already entered human trials, is my understanding. So it's
I have a
not
great interest in this. I mean, about 10, 12 years ago, I had a couple lymph nodes removed that turned out not to be cancerous, but I have several swollen lymph nodes that they look at occasionally,
right. And
that could at any time go the bad way.
Right.
So cancer, you know, is obviously something I'm very interested in. So.
Right. When,
you know,
one lady I talked to told me that if you know women that are not afraid of breast cancer and other things like that are just well, you know, there are no women like that. Every woman is afraid of that. And
it means they've never heard it.
Yeah, they're so ignorant they don't know about it. But I mean, all women know about it. So it's a horrible thing, and I've had loved ones myself who have gone down with it, and so it's time to do something about it. And
there's some movie out there that had nanotechnology in it, where like these little. I mean, I kept trying to think of it when I was in your chat room, and there's some movie out there that. Are you guys? Do you know what I'm talking about? Or
spooky nanotech. What happened in the movie?
Well, yeah, give us a plot summary.
I can't even remember. All I remember is that there was something about. The little, and I can't, and I said maybe it was from a Stephen King novel. Now I'm just totally brain dead on exactly where I saw this, where it was a movie that had.
Well, it wasn't Michael Crichton's novel, was it?
It might have been. They injected, all I remember is like a scene, it was so long ago I read this book, and then they injected somebody with a needle, and they had, I think it might have been Michael Crichton.
Yeah. Was that Prey? Was it Prey?
Yes. That's
okay.
The book.
Yeah, yeah. That was more about basically nanobot, the gray goo scenario, I think, where, you know, there's the danger of it taking over the whole world. I think that most people that are involved in nanotech give that kind of, saying it's just really not possible. In this physical universe that we live in, it just wouldn't work that way.
But when you start talking about that, and then you see like a news story that like last week, somebody talking about like the legality of marriages between humans and robots. Did you see that from China? They're coming out with. Humanoid-looking robots that...
Yeah, Instapundent actually linked that. I saw that linked on a few other places. If I had more time, I was going to write on that. It was very interesting. Yeah, what's your take, Jen, on people and robots getting married?
Well, one of my favorite movies is that movie with Robin Williams, and I'm like...
Oh, yeah, Bicentennial Man.
Yes, thank you. I've watched that movie like 20 times. Like,
I love that movie, too. It's great.
It's raining ash on me right now, so I'm just kind of a little brain dead tonight. But
Are you in California, where the wildfire?
I'm in Southern California, yes.
Yeah, I heard it was near Malibu. Is that right? So.
No, actually, I'm in San Diego. We've got 3 fires down here. Malibu is nothing to us.
Okay.
Okay.
Literally right now I'm sitting on my patio and there's ash raining on me, although I've got an umbrella over me. But
I guess you'll know when it's time to leave, huh?
Well, I live right by the beach, so if you consider how big the fires are already at, I mean, it makes Malibu look like nothing, but nobody cares about San Diego. Malibu's got stars in it.
So the political resources that come out from Malibu a little more, huh?
It's Malibu. I mean, here's the San Diego. There's only like 8 million
radio
people here.
About San Diego.
It's just San Diego. It's only the 8th largest city in the state. When the
time comes, if you have to, don't stay on the show. Run out to the beach, okay?
Yeah. Go get in the water. Do what you need to do.
It only takes me 5 minutes to get there by foot, so it's not that bad.
But I'm sorry, we digress. You were about to tell us all about... your thoughts.
Well, I found that movie very interesting because, like, my parents hated it. They watched it, and they're from a different generation. And obviously, I'm in the middle generation. I'm 33, so the internet didn't exist when I was a child. I mean, the biggest thrill of my life was Pong when I was a kid, and y'all remember that.
Yeah, we do.
And I'm self-taught. Everything I know about computers, everything I know about the internet, everything's self-taught. Nothing was taught to me in school or anywhere else. But, when I was in high school, the computers we had, they had like the black screens with the orange writing on it, and it was just, you know, it was not, there was nothing. And then when I watched Bicentennial Man, it made me think. And of course, I'm an Asimov fan as well. And that makes me think. And so it was actually hard when that story came out about, you know, the fact that he, and then of course you've got the, and of course I do a political show, several, and it's hard because I'm a Republican, I'm evil. But I'm also an atheist Republican, so they're
boy, that's an interesting combo.
Yes, it is, but. Yeah. When you start looking at these kind of things, you go, like, with the gay rights debate, and it's like, well, what's going to happen when and if, and at the rate we're going, it's possible, that's going to happen. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. And then, I don't know, that's why I clicked on your show. I thought it was kind of interesting. You guys said to call in, so I did.
We appreciate you calling in. And, yeah, Bicentennial Man is an awesome show. I enjoyed the book as well, which was very much different. Leave it to Hollywood to change the story, but it was still good. And
for those who aren't familiar with the story, is there an aspect of a human-robot relationship in Bicentennial Man that somehow connects this back to our discussion?
Oh, well, yeah, there is. Jen, if you don't mind, I'll give a quick plot summary, okay?
Go for it.
Okay. He starts off as basically an appliance. He's brought into this family. He's introduced to the family. He's basically a butler, maybe, but less than a human being. It turns out he's a little different than the typical robot. He wants to learn more. He wants to grow, and he does. And over the course of his 200-year lifetime, he grows and becomes, and for all practical purposes, a human. During that time, he ends up marrying a descendant of his original owner.
Uh-huh.
And he marries little Miss's granddaughter, actually, doesn't he?
I know, I'm going to cry.
Yeah. It's a great show, and the one thing that kind of bugged me about that movie, because we're big life extension, you know, proponents as well, Jen, is that he chose to die to be human. Well, I don't think that that's necessary, but
is. That's part of humanity.
Well, yeah, but it's an unfortunate part.
We're not going to have time to go there
tonight. We go too far in this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we going to fight now?
No, thanks. We're not, because we can hang up on you.
But we won't.
Two men enter, one woman leaves.
I would agree with you, Stephen. A robot who wants to be human would want to live.
Yeah, well, you would think, but anyway, he chose that path. But anyway, Jen, let's give you an opportunity to plug your show. What's the name of your show?
No, seriously, I do not call in to plug my show.
Oh, yeah, but I want you to plug your show. What's the name of your show?
At Jen's Jungle Republic and My Point Radio and CIR Radio, and I guest host on a few other ones.
can they find you on Blog Talk Radio?
I'm a Blog Talk Radio whore.
Okay, you love it.
Look for Jen of the Jungle, is that right?
Jen of the Jungle, Jen's Jungle, everyone knows me.
Okay.
But no, I was really interested, I mean, what are your names? I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm Stephen Gordon.
And Phil Bauermaster.
Yeah, so.
And Phil, you're the one that kind of got a little angry when what I just said about extending life wouldn't be a good thing.
No, I did not get angry.
I sense a little tension.
No, I've, Jen, well, Stephen, let's include a link to Death Sucks on the
Yeah, yeah. So, Jen, you can get our viewpoint on that. Phil wrote an article entitled "Death Sucks,"
I think you'll
understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, there's nothing I enjoy more than talking
my,
to people.
As I sit here in the smoke, inhaling the ash, smoking a cigarette, and drinking a beer.
Yeah. Well, death still sucks, I promise you, even in those circumstances. Well,
unfortunately, it's inevitable to admit it is.
That doesn't mean that life can't suck.
Yeah, but death sucks even worse.
I never said life doesn't.
Anyway, Jen, we got to wrap our show up, so I'm going to. It was great talking to you, and I want to come by and listen to your show and perhaps call in too, okay?
Thank you so much
scary
for calling
sometimes.
In, Jen. We enjoyed having you on.
Yeah.
Politics are scary.
Well, we love politics as well, and we get into that from time to time, but we try to keep it on futurism. But thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call, you guys. Have a great night.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Now, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right.
Matt, I think you're still with us, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, we were visiting with Jen and having a good time. We just didn't bring you in on that. Too bad, but... I wanted to thank you also for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're our most regular caller.
Yeah.
We've had callers. You've always called in. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Great, it's great hearing from you again, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Well, we've had a big night of it, Phil.
We certainly have. We're going to have to get more disciplined on calls. If we ever get 10 or 15, we'll have to extend the show out to 4 or 5 hours. Don't you?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, at this moment, we don't really have to be that disciplined. We can just have a lot of fun with each individual caller.
Well, if they'd let us go longer, we could have gotten into the whole life extension thing with Jen.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, maybe we can make that the subject of the next show, because we do want to bring in Dave Goble on a show that's coming up. And, I mean, he's all about life extension, so...
Yes. Now, whether that will be on this show initially or whether it will first be on a Better All the Time radio show that may come up first and then we'll replay it here, or how that's going to work, we're working out those details even as we speak.
Right.
People are talking to Dave's people, and... That's right.
We're going to have lunch with him or something something out. Yeah.
Yes,
our people will have lunch with his people and work something out.
Exactly. We'll figure something out. We're very much looking forward to having Dave on the show and talking about life extension. So hopefully Jen will listen that night. She can call in again and get it straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Yeah, about how that works. So, anyway, it's been a great show, Phil. We do have some music to round the show out with.
Okay, what do we got tonight, Steve?
Well, it's the Seldom Plan again. I like this band. We've had them on before with music before on our show. This particular one's called A Rhyming Dictionary, and I think you'll like how it starts out.
All right. Well, looking forward to listening to that, and thank you all for listening to us. We will check you out. We'll catch you next time on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.
Good night.
La réponse est bonne.
That was track number one from the album Making Circles by The Selden Plan from Magnatune.com.